straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first, On Second Thought.
On Second Thought, episode 326, brought to you by Hook'em.com, our good friends at Bud Light. Cedric Golden here with the Duck, Kirk Bowles. Duck, always a blessing to have Longhorn royalty in our midst. Keith Moreland, our old friend, the man who taught me how not to play blackjack. And we still won. He joins us. The Longhorns off to a 3-1 start. And, you know, Keith and Grace Wendell are keeping us posted on Longhorn Network. They are so fun to watch. Horns play Cal Poly, 3-game set this weekend. Keith, what's up, man?
Not a man. It's great to sit and visit with y'all. And, yeah, it's that time of the year, as I usually say in the opening broadcast each year. It's for us that are love baseball, it's Christmas in February. And this year it happened to be on Valentine's to go with it. So, you know, it's fun to be underway. It's interesting. Kirk can go back to this. It's interesting. It's the first time that I can remember a Longhorn team opening up with an 8-game homestand start season going back, because Augie always felt like Cliff played every game at home, but Augie liked to get out on the road and see things and do things. That was just Coach Garrido's style. So the first trip will be next weekend. So it's interesting. San Diego team that they played in the opener was a pretty good test. Folks, they're gonna play real well in the West Coast Conference.
I
really
agree.
Well schooled ball club.
Good defensively too. Boy, they made some great plays. The second baseman, the shortstop, the left fielder. I mean, you're absolutely right. Yeah, that was a good team.
They did the little things. They when they got guys on, they bunted them in scoring position. They executed. They made plays when they needed to. They had leads in all three games.
That's right.
In the ballgame. Where they might be a little short is once you get their starters. Now, their three guys on the mound to start were all competitive college baseball pitchers, but where they struggled was when they had to go to their bullpen.
And like you said, you know, they did have 5 D1 transfer pitchers, 2 of them from Arizona who started against Texas. And that transfer portal's really changed baseball too, just like everything else, hasn't it?
Well, I don't even know where to start. Now you're getting into it. You guys cover all the sports. I'm a college sports and athletics fan. I'm not sure that I'm all that happy about what's going on in the portal, but I'm an old traditionalist. So I understand if a young man's not getting the opportunity to perform the way he thinks and he feels like he's being held back, that one-time transfer I could see. But, boy, just putting your name in each year and going wherever you want to go, when you want to go, I don't know that free agency – college sports is ready for free agency.
I got to ask you, it feels like pro sports now, and you play pro sports at a high level. I mean, you have a World Series ring. You called Greg Maddux, and I think you even called Sparky Lyle. You mentioned that on the you mentioned that on the broadcast the other night. When does it all just fall apart? Are we about to have an Armageddon with all these athletes signing with the highest bidder?
Well, let's start with I think that we are going rapidly toward maybe 30 universities in the country that can afford to play at that upper level. And I think that they're going to have other universities that are not going to be able to afford. Obviously, if you're a Longhorn fan, you're going to be in that 30. I mean, nobody else can afford more than they can afford. If they need it, they got it. But you just look at the tradition of what's going on. I just don't know how a perennial program like Cal State Fullerton, I go back to Coach Garrido, how in the world is that program ever going to do what Augie did with a $6,500 budget making his first trip to Omaha with that kind of budget? Because he could go out, he did things on his own, spent money out of his own pocket, and go about that. That's gone. It's none of that anymore. You have to recruit an athlete once they get on campus every single day they're on campus playing for you. Just think about that. You have to recruit them every single day.
They can leave.
If you don't recruit them, they are leaving.
Yeah, absolutely. And that didn't even then, touch on NIL.
We haven't even got to that part. And then how does the university, the marriage between the NIL program and the university and the NCAA, how does that all match? It doesn't match. There are forks, but they're all forks going in the other directions.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I just think, NIL, I don't know. It's interesting because we all hear about the stars, especially in football and some in men's basketball. I don't know how many players does David, or is he allowed? Does he have 30 on scholarship, or I don't know how many the number is now?
I know exactly the terms. He's got to have a minimum of 27 on scholarship, and they all have to have getting at least a quarter. So, okay. And he can have 35 tops in his program. So that means you've got 8 non-scholarship players that can be on your squad.
And I wonder how many of those get NIL at all, Keith.
I don't know, but I know that when they first looked at this and I first got involved trying to do some fundraising, I am out of it now, backed away because I didn't like everything that's going in it. When you start looking at that, this position is going to get this much and this position is going to get this much, right. I can see helping everybody and everybody get the same total. Then I'm going, okay, if fans want to give money and they want to be in an NIL program and you want to help a young man have some cash in his pocket, I am all for that. But it ought to all be the same. You shouldn't be paying your shortstop $50,000, your starting pitcher $50,000, and the guy that backs him up that may not play over wants to get nothing. That's mm-hmm. not fair.
Life's not fair. So I think
it's not.
And I really think the one thing that Kirk and I talk about a lot, Zonk, is it's great right now. Well, what's going to happen in 5 or 6 years when those tax evasion charges start coming? You really think these kids are all paying taxes, man? Driving around in Lambos and Teslas? I hope they are, but, I mean, that's a Pollyanna view.
Somebody helping them. I mean, they've got to have some kind of help there. To me, there's one of the things the university can do. You have to have somebody. They used to have compliance officers. Well, I don't know that that's important anymore. I mean, well, what right. compliance is there?
Everything's so, legal.
You're going to have to develop a way to help these young men and young women that maybe have never even heard about. So what do you mean I'm getting this 1099 form? What do I do with this? And if they haven't withheld anything, then all of a sudden April 15th comes. The lessons that we learned by going out and getting our first job and everything, they'd have to learn that anyway, yes, but when they go out and get their first job, it's not like money for nothing and chicks for free, as they used to say, the Dire Straits song.
There you go.
They need to have a class for that, Keith.
I hope they do.
Finances and everything.
Well, I've written about it. I've written about it, guys, and Del Conte has that. He's got people coming in. Former athletes and professionals warning about the dangers of that. So hopefully these kids are taking it seriously and taking advantage of the resource, because I don't worry about the Bijan Robinsons of the world, because we knew that he was NFL bound and he was going to be a millionaire anyway. I worry about the guys that don't make it, that aren't paying their taxes, and then they're going to look up and hopefully they took school seriously, but there are guys out there that don't take it seriously and they're going to end up with no degree and a tax bill. That's a nightmare.
Well, the numbers are not as big, but I want y'all to think about this. I said you and I have had this conversation for sure. When I signed a professional baseball contract, one out of every 606 that signed a contract played one day in the big league. Let that absorb.
Wow.
Now, I don't think that number is as large because there's not as many people signing. I mean, they don't have 2 or 3 low A rookie balls and
right, no 40 rounds.
I mean, the minor leagues is so shrunk and there's so few people playing part. Once they signed you now, you got a much better chance of getting there than you did 10 years ago, especially 15, 20, 25 years ago. I mean, those guys, you know, you were running on and playing against guys that they would just sign a guy to say, let's, because somebody else might sign him. And they'd have him for a couple of years and didn't make it and out the door. Well, today it's a little different, but these guys better get educations, because the chances of doing playing for money other than playing in college, because they're playing for money there too now. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. Let's just be honest about it and go from there.
Yeah, what would a Keith Moreland be getting in NIL money in 2024, Keith?
I don't know. I know Bob and Barbara Moreland would appreciate it.
Oh my goodness! Didn't you transfer to USC or somewhere? Right?
Not a chance.
You know, he's a Texan.
Kirk, you were here at that time. I my hair was the same color as the uniform. I wouldn't change it.
That dude's from Dallas. He wasn't going nowhere.
He was a joy to cover. I'm telling the greatest Longhorn ever.
Let me ask you this, Keith. In the offseason, Kirk and I were at a Derek Johnson's fundraiser, Defend the Dream fundraiser, and we ran up on LeBaron Johnson Jr. and Tanner Witt, and those guys are massive. Those are some good-looking boys right there, big old boys, and they were excited. And Tanner said he was throwing and he was feeling good. And then, Duck, remember this? 3 weeks ago, we ran up on Tanner at Belmont and talked to him and about – he was talking about ping pong and how good he's feeling. And he didn't get off to a great start. I know it's early. How important is it to play the long game with him? Because it's a long season. And, man, if he's not Tanner Witt, they may have some problems.
Well, let's start with I'm going to answer you first. LBJ, these two are physical guys. That's one thing David Pierce has recruited, is physical players. You have to in today's world. Where they're going next year, you better be physical. Let's start with that, because the SEC. No. But Tanner Witt's an interesting question. Such a pleasure to be around. Always got a smile on his face. Hardworking young man. He didn't look right, guys, on Sunday. It just from the very first pitch. Now, he got through the first, but he didn't look anywhere close to himself. And it wasn't necessarily, yes, he didn't have velocity, but he didn't, his demeanor on the mound, it's something was not right. And the second he came out, and what happens to you when you know you don't have your great stuff, you get a little picky and you start picking at the corners, and you looked up and he was 2-0 on everybody. And he didn't want to, you know, he's one of those guys at 2-0, I'd drop a breaking ball in there. Well, he couldn't have a feel for his breaking ball, so he couldn't do that. And we're hoping that this is something, you know, he was tender. And I think he would have been able to work through that if everything was right. I don't have any new information on that. I don't know what the scenario is, but I'm rooting for him, because he's one of those guys you just can't help but love being around him for 3 years. And the way he went about his business after being injured, and what an integral part he was going to be last year, it's and his parents did a really good job. Good young man.
Yeah, he's super. I mean, we go back to that game against Tennessee at Omaha, and you know, he shut down the Volunteers and as good a stuff as anybody. I mean, he's so impressive. And yeah, and I don't know, like you say, if he just has to pitch through it and going to have some struggles, or does he need more time off? Everybody's different coming off of that Tommy John, you know.
Yeah, it does a little different. I would suspect that they will probably, you know, obviously today's an off day for him. They take Mondays off. I would think you will see him if he is sound. And I wouldn't be surprised if you wouldn't see him for an inning if he's capable. If he's hurting, they'll push him and that you won't see him. But don't know that that's the case. But boy, he's going to be an integral part of this team. If he can come back and be 90% of what he was, he's going to be a huge addition to this club. And there's another one that's in the same boat, guys, that you, Greg, and I both really like. His name is Luke Harrison. And he made his first start in 1,000 days last night.
Wow.
In the game. Now, he can tell, you know, because he's had Tommy John. And in 22, he was one of the best lefties out of the bullpen. He was that guy that could get you a lot out of the bullpen. But we'll see how it comes about for him. He was not as sharp last night as he was his first time, first inning out. But that, again, getting that ball, and you know 45 minutes before the game you're going to start, it's a lot different animal than the phone rings and say, get up and start throwing. Swindell says it to me all the time. I say, Zeke, he said, you know, when you're starting all day long, you get prepared and whatever. And he says, there's nerves there. He said, I never got nervous once in my life as a reliever because you don't know you're going to pitch. You're just down there with your cleats on.
Exactly. But don't you figure, like we talked about Tanner Witt and he and Charlie Hurley, you know, following LBJ in the rotation. They got to get one of those, don't they, that there's going to be right and highly productive if they're really going to be the kind of team that we expect them to be?
You know, Kirk, had a conversation with Coach Pearson, and he is absolutely right. He told me a month ago, he says, there is a lot of different arms. Don't know who those guys are going to be, but over the course of these first four games, I've seen arms come out of the bullpen that you go, okay. I mean, it's not like they're coming out and they're looking. They've got their power arms, and that's what you got to have. I mean, if you want to be playing the elite level, you better have guys coming out in the fourth inning. If your starter's not well, it's a power arm. So I like Cody Howard. I think that he's going to be in the mix to be one of the starters. He's got a really good mound presence on him. And he doesn't get flustered at all. Came in with the bases loaded and a run already in and nobody out and found a way to get out of that just giving up one. And that set the tone on Sunday. And then he gets the win. He pitches for four innings. They're going to stretch him out. I like Luke Harrison. And then on the back end, I think they have who they're really counting on pretty much already. I think you'll see Fontenot, Boehm, and Shaw be those guys to get those last, you know, 7, 8, 9 outs of a ball game.
He's got some options.
Is there a closer, or is it a closer by committee?
I think it'll be a closer by committee early. I think both Fontenot and Boehm have, I mean, they're going to come in 94, 95 with a hard breaking ball. And then you got Shaw, who if Shaw had 5 more miles an hour, you think he's Chris Sale. I mean, close your eyes and look at him, and he looks like Chris Sale when he releases the ball. It's an unusual arm slot. He's 6'7", ball comes out. You know, missing him at the end of the year last year really hurt them, especially when they had lead in Stanford. That really hurt them not having him. He's going to be an integral part of this baseball team.
Let's talk about the offense a little bit. Top of the order. Thomas and Powell, pretty good first two hitters in any lineup, weren't they?
Well, you asked me a couple of years ago about Ivan at the beginning of the year, and I told you it might be the best right-hand hitter that's ever played here.
And we were like, are you nuts? You're Keith Moreland, and you wouldn't, and you insisted that he was going to be great.
Well, I told you, this guy can hit. I mean, not only could he hit, he hit with exceptional power, not good power, not even light tower power, because it was better than light tower.
Right.
But Jared Thomas is one of those guys, and Kirk's seen a lot of Texas baseball like I have. I don't compare, and I don't do it on the air, and I don't do it a lot, but I'm just saying I think this guy's got a long, long baseball career ahead of him. He stays inside the ball so well. He's going to be an outfielder professionally. He doesn't have the pop to play one of the corners. To play first. I mean, he's an exceptional first baseman, but – probably at the next level, he doesn't hit, you know, he's probably 15, 18 home run guy. It may not be that 35, 40 home run guy, but this guy's going to hit, and he's going to hit at every level. He can really run. He has tremendous plate recognition, maybe as good as we've seen. You just don't see him going outside the zone. Now, he'll set a pitcher up where he'll take, maybe that third time up, it's the same pitcher, and the guy says, well, this guy's just taking my first pitch, and they lay one in there. He'll turn and he'll smack it, but uses the whole field. You have to defend him from the right field corner to the left field corner, and he can run. And I expect he's going to hit close to 400 for the year. That's my prediction.
He's good.
Peyton Powell, when he came out of Robinson and came to campus, I'll give Coach Pierce, great credit for that recognition. Couldn't figure out exactly where he fit in and what happened so early. He didn't get a lot of opportunities. And then, you know, kept working, finally made himself a good defensive player. And then those two at the top of this order against everybody are going to be really tough. And they hit – and here's the other part. A lot of them you see fall off when left-handed pitchers come in. Neither one of them fall off. They're good against left or right.
Kind of remind me of Brian Cesarek a little bit. That bat always finds the ball, it seems like. And I don't know if they can drive in runs too. I don't know if you'd rather have somebody else like a D. Kennedy or somebody leading off have Thomas second and third. I don't know.
I wouldn't. I would get as many at bats in a ball game for JT as I could get. And I understand exactly why David's at the top. And Peyton is so good behind him. I like the combination. Again, left to right doesn't bother him. Now, those next three, four, five, who's going to be that person to step up? We know Porter Brown. He's off to a slow start, but Porter Brown's going to hit. I mean, he's a veteran guy. He's hit at every level. So, and Jalen Flores has got this knack that when he squares it, it's got a different sound, Kirk. I mean, it's just a different sound. So, can he be consistent enough to, you know, be a guy that can? I don't think you look at him and worry about hitting 300. Just let him go do his thing, because I think he's a 10 or 15 home run guy. And in a college, that's a bunch of home runs. You know, Longhorn fans are, you know, look back and look at Melendez. That's absurd. Anything over at 20 and up is just absurd. But I think that he's got 10 to 15 home run power.
You know, you're that unique person that can talk about catcher because you played it as well as third. Schussler or Galvan, long term, who do you think wins that job?
You know, I don't know yet. I think that Ryland last night had a brilliant night offensively, and they're trying to get him better offensively and more consistent. And Kimball is one of those hardworking kids. It just his want to is so much that, and the pitchers love throwing to him. So I would think at this moment, one of them is going to have to win the job. But I think you're going to see with Jeff. We played four ball games.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them have started two games apiece, and I think you'll see that over the weekend. I think you're going to see that until somebody establishes that they're going to take control of that position. You know, they don't have the responsibilities that some of the catchers in the old day have called on the game, because that's done now electronically with wristbands and radios and all the stuff. So all they got to do is just, you know, handle the umpire, you know, get that pitcher in that zone and bring them to you. I think that's a real key to how far this team goes. I don't want to put pressure on them. If the kids turn this on and watched it, I'm not putting any pressure, but I think
they're not watching, Keith. They're not watching. I guarantee you.
Okay.
They're
not watching. That's a key position. It's interesting you brought that up, because I think that's the biggest key position on this club to see where it can go. And then you got two freshmen and a sophomore outfield that you're going to see how that works together and works out. Because Gasparino is obviously, you're not considered one of the top 75 players coming out of high school and not be a good player. It's going to take him a while to be real consistent, but where you see things. Last night, he turned on a ball inside because he's 6'7". I play with a lot of guys that are that big, and that's hard for them to get to the inside pitch, and ripped it down the line and kept it fair. And y'all both heard me say that thing. That is hard to do. That means you got your hands inside it and the barrel to it and didn't go around it and get the barrel to it. So I think he's something special. One of the big keys, maybe Max Ballou. He is an exceptional outfielder. He's got the best arm. I thought DC, if there was a gold glove in college, DC won six of them last year, not just one. He was brilliant. But Ballou can play right field, and he's got a tremendous arm, and he's got some big-time power. Can he hit? Can he find that zone enough to hit? And then Tommy Farmer, you know, you could put him in center field and forget about it. He's going to make every play in all directions, can really go get it and run. He has struggled a little bit early here offensively.
Yeah, Will's scuffling a little bit too, but Max is one of those physical players that you mentioned that David likes and you're going to need in the SEC, right?
You're right, and he can go – the monster's nothing. I mean, hit one over the monster when I played in this ballpark was a feat. It just didn't happen very often. Since Ivan's been here, they go over it regularly.
They beat up on the Christians. They beat up on the Christians Tuesday night. I wasn't happy about that. I said a little prayer. I mean,
well, beating up on Jesus 20-3. You guys are fans of college sports, and I know you are. Lance has got a lot better club. I mean, he had four games over the weekend. He knew he was thin. He told Zeke and I before the game, hey, but you'll see, and they are a lot better. The two LaRue brothers, their dad played in the big leagues. They know how to play. I've been broadcasting long enough that Josh Bard's son was playing in last night's game. And I'm sitting there looking at that going, I've been doing this for a long time. Now I've got players that I call games for, and now they're sons I'm calling games for.
And Kate O'Hara, position player, pitches You never pitched in a major league game, did you? I know you played nearly every other position.
I did not. I was in a few games where there were some everyday players pitched, but I didn't want any part of it. No, y'all can, you can get somebody else. I'll sit out here and shag everything. But Cade has – this has not been unusual. He's been throwing all time. He's been in a pitching program. So don't make it sound like he was just a guy that, well, they're going to go down and throw him in the game. He's been pitching inter squads. He's been in the program. And I tell you what, it looked pretty good. 90-91 with a good bender. Looked really good last night.
Well, but hey, go ahead. One more, Kurt. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask you a little bit about the schedule. I don't know what Cal Poly has, and then they got LSU and Vanderbilt down in the Houston tournament. What do they hope to find these next, four, five, six games, Keith?
Well, I let's start with Cal Poly will be the same type of team. David coming from where he came from to get here, being at the mid-major programs like Sam, Tulane, seeing what they were going on. He likes to play those, and he knows those coaches. The head coach at Cal Poly's been there 24 years. He has his program the way he wants it. They will be very it's West Coast ball. They'll be very consistent. They'll see pitches. They'll run a little bit. They'll bunt. They will defensively not give you anything. So they are a team that are not going to come in and beat themselves. Mm-hmm. So that's what that's what you want on your schedule is people like that. Then starting really next Tuesday, the next five are legit games. I mean, last night
beat Florida.
Texas State took TCU to the very limit. TCU did win the game, but St. John's beats Florida. They only got to play one game because of rain down there. And so I don't know who St. John's has got this weekend, but people around tell me that they're pretty good. And then after St. John's, you go down and you get LSU, Texas State, and Vandy. Well, welcome to the SEC. We're going to see that next year. And then, oh, by the way, on Tuesday, you got A&M. So it's going to turn much tougher quickly. And then after you play A&M, you come back home and you got Washington, and then you head to Tech. Or you may go to Tech and then head to Washington. So I'm
curious.
Those are flip-flopped or where they are. So it's going to turn real quickly.
Well, before we get you out of here, I would be remiss if I didn't thank you and Greg Swindell for such a great run on the Longhorn Network. This is your last season on the LHN, and you guys were must-see TV. I mean, if you're in the car listening to Craig Way, that's great. But if you're at home and you're not going out to the game and you don't have it on LHN, you're missing out. You guys have done such a tremendous job, and I'm not saying it because you're my boys. I call it like I see it. CDC said that Longhorn Networks are going to be absorbed into the SEC network. What does that mean for you guys? Will you still be calling games next year? I'm interested to know.
At this point, none of us know. We are on a one-year deal that expires at the end of the year. We know that the last broadcast that's ever going to take place is going to be the Saturday game in baseball on the 19th or 20th of May, live, that I know of, at least at this point. That's what's on the schedule. There may be something coming behind that, but I don't know. I know June 1st that it officially – and when you mean absorbed, if you look at the SEC, a lot of the schools have their own inside ESPN Plus broadcast. So if I'm sure the University of Texas is going to have that. Now, as far as I know, Greg and I have not been contacted about being involved in it. And, I would love to listen if they're into that. But we love what we do. It's been such a fun time. We said when I got the job, again, I've been coming to this world thinking I'd be a play-by-play guy. Now, I've been a pretty good analyst for a long time, but I felt like in my mind anyway. And but us going together, we sit and we just almost like we're having an adult beverage and sitting across from each other and just we're watching the game, talking about the game. I don't do a lot of talking about this guy's coming up and whatever. Probably don't give you as much information as another play-by-play guy, but
we don't need it. We want to hear y'all talk ball. That's all we care about.
And that's what we do. I mean, we just sit down and there might be something that comes up that Greg's got an idea on it, seen before, or I haven't seen before. I mean, you know, last night, a perfect example, ground ball, double play ball, and the ball was thrown and hit the screen. The guy made the turn and go around to the side, and everybody in the press box was wondering, well, they called it a double play. It's not a double play. It's a force out at second base, a bad throw at first because you can't assume the double play and you tag the runner. So yeah, you score that, you're scoring it, is, you know, 6-4 and then 3 unassisted because the first baseman went, got the ball, tagged the runner, and went through this. So that's – it's there's two outs recorded on the play, but it's not a double play. Because once he touched first base, that first play is over. And so there's a little bitty thing to try to teach somebody out there, and we that's – I don't want to get too basic, but you got to be basic because somebody might have turned in for the first time, and that's the first time they really know anything about baseball.
Yeah, but you two know the history. You've lived it. You've been part of it. Two of the all-time greatest Longhorns ever. And I enjoyed Saturday when you had Richard Wortham, you know, in the booth. Oh. You know, NCAA's first 50-game winner. And, you know, I don't know what, if people were listening going, did he say 15 or 50? Because
I said 50.
It was incredible.
How lucky was I? I could sit in the booth with the two, maybe the two best left-handers in college baseball history, but for sure the two best left-handers in Longhorn history. In between them, I knew it. I didn't get it on the air until right at the very end. And a lot of people didn't hear it. Greg has 511 strikeouts in three seasons. Richard had 485 in four seasons. Between them, they have 1,000 strikeouts.
Two pitchers. That's disgusting. It's disgusting. That is disgusting.
And speaking of that, before we let you go, I want to know, was there a teammate you had trouble hitting off of? Because you hit everybody. I don't know, an inner squad, if you didn't want to face Gideon or Wortham or anybody.
It's a name you'll know, and it got me – it got my chance to Cliff to notice me and get me a chance as a freshman because I was coming over for football in a bowl game. Ron Rosnowski got me out every time. That's a name from the past. A lot of fans may not remember Ron. He's not with us anymore. But
big right-hander.
Big right-hander. We're slowing everybody down. I got a chance to get in the game. He was still in the game. And the first pitch he hit me, I'm just saying, I'm just swinging as hard as I can. And I hit it over the pillbox onto out of the stadium at Oak Clark Field. And the next day I was in the inter-squad game, which I hadn't been starting in any of the games. So, you know, you have 18 guys that are playing. You're not one of the 18. I figure, well, I'm going to spring football. And I got that opportunity. And the next day I was in it. And the rest of it's pretty much history from that point. I started the first game of the season. But the rest of the time that Ron was in college, I don't think I put it in play. So he was the guy that – I mean, it just happened to be that he made one bad pitch and I connected. And after that, he wore me out.
Wow. That's awesome. That's awesome. Cool. Well, man, it's been fun, man. I hope we can do it again before the season and as LHN starts to close its doors. But we're gonna write and we're gonna insist you're on ESPN Plus or SEC Network because you and Zeke both have to be on UT baseball.
They can't break up the Blues Brothers.
They cannot.
They can't break up the Blues Brothers. They're great. They're great.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks,
Keith. All right, brother. Appreciate you.
See you at the yard.
See you at the yard.
On Second Thought.
Duck, it's always great to visit with our old friend Keith Moreland. Man, just some of the most fun times I had as the UT baseball beat writer and during the, I like to call it the golden era. When they won it in 05, I was there 03, 04, 05, and 06. Just taught me a lot about the game and just loves talking ball. And him and Swindell are just two of the best. And I just hope they find a way to keep them calling games together.
I can't imagine they wouldn't. They're such a resource. And, you know, that was my first year on the beat, 1975, when they won the national championship. Gus won his first. And I think Keith hit like 410 or something that year. So, but like I wrote in 9 things this week, he and Greg Swindell are two of my top 5 all-time greatest UT baseball players to cover in my 50 years. And they'd be such an asset. I got to believe they'll continue to be on ESPN Plus, SEC Network, UT channel, whatever. They need to be on there.
Yeah, they do. And let's hit on something big news coming out of the football program. Steve Sarkisian, big contract extension, 10.3 mil a year, $100,000 raises each year, $300,000 one-time payment just because we're Texas and we can do that. Private jet access, new cars. And you wrote so very eloquently, I might add, that it was a great deal and Stark deserves that money. And then, of course, I came back in. Why do I always have to be the bad cop? That's what I'm asking.
Oh,
Why
Ryan.
am I always the bad cop? Why did
Should we
I
take
have
a
to?
poll? Do you want to take a
Why did
poll?
why do I always have to come back and bring some levity to this situation and some realness and say it does come with a little bit of risk. But of course they came for my throat when I said it and they go, yeah. Of course they were like, you're no Kirk Bowles. And I go, of course I'm not. I'm not a legend. But I still gotta be real.
There's
But I
always
still
a
gotta be
risk.
real.
Yeah.
No, real serious talk though. They had to do it. They
Yeah.
can't go into the SEC half-stepping. They got to go in arrogant, like they got to go in pretending they're the UT baseball team, which doesn't have as many problems with SEC competition,
Well.
or our guy Jared Elliott, who just runs over everybody. Where Sark's taking care of the SEC teams he's played, so I'm on board for it, but I had to bring it up because it blew up in Texas A&M's face when they gave Jimbo all that money. And I'm not saying it's going to happen with Sark because I really believe that Steve Sarkisian is the man for this job. And he's proven leading going forward that he is the absolute best choice to lead this program into the future. I believe that.
I don't love guaranteed contracts. I understand it. It's the market. In fact, I argued with somebody at UT and I wrote in nine things this week. I'd have preferred to give him 8 million. That would have been a $2.4 million raise. That's pretty healthy.
Huge.
That's pretty
That's
healthy.
Kirk. That's Kirk Bowles' money there. Yeah.
And I just think. And somebody at UT, we got in discussion about it, and he told me that, well, because I wrote Saturday that Alabama probably would have made Sark his first choice if they were been able to get him. But he didn't want to follow Sark. He didn't want to live in Tuscaloosa. He's building his own program here for all those
Didn't
reasons.
want to follow Saban.
Didn't want to follow Saban. And the person I was discussing it with said, all right, say Alabama, we pay Sark and give him this 8 million a year, as you suggest, or 10 million, but it wasn't guaranteed. And then Alabama comes along and says, well, we'll guarantee it. I go, I see your point. I see your point. That's the market value. I just think I would have, as I wrote in Wednesday's paper, I would prefer an 8 million. Give him a 2 million national championship bonus if he wins it all, and don't make it all guaranteed, and don't empty the bank because but there it's a shallow pool of candidates. I mean, if Sark, for whatever reason, Jerry fires Mike McCarthy today, and he's going out, and he said, I'm going to hire Steve Sarkisian. I want him to be my head coach. So Texas is left holding the bag. It could happen any minute. So I don't know who do you get. It's not like there's a line of 20 guys that are capable and competent enough to be the coach at UT, is there?
No, and why? I mean, if you're CDC or Kevin Eltife, why take a risk that someone's going to poach your guy?
That's the way they
You
look at it.
went and pulled him out of the wilderness. I mean, he was not guaranteed that he'd ever be a head coach again. You pulled him out of the wilderness. You saw something in him. Tough start, 5-7. But then he built this thing. He's won 20 out of his last 27 games. and a conference title and a CFP appearance. And now that the CFP is going to 12 teams, he's got to finish in the top 12, get Texas in that tournament. And the coffers are still going to be filling up. And so for me, I understand that you didn't want to risk it. I don't like long-term marriages because by and large, they don't work. But I do like the fact that you did give him a raise. He hasn't accomplished what the other two guys on that list, Kirby Smart and Dabo Swinney, have accomplished, but there's potential. Those guys have produced, and Sark has potential to produce. 12-2 does not a career make, but it's a damn good start, and it's way better than anything we've been seeing over the last decade plus.
Yeah, and like I said, if he did leave, I don't know who you'd try to go, you know, pilfer, you know, maybe get Nick Saban try to come out of retirement.
But, no.
But Dabo's not leaving, Kirby's not leaving, and there's just not a plethora of coaches that are proven to do that. So, but yeah, and you mentioned the 12 playoff team. That spills into our next topic about the CFP going to 12 teams. As you said, 5-7, the five highest ranked conference champions.
Conference champions, yes.
And then the next seven highest ranked teams get at-large bids. So they switched from the 6-6 after the Pac-12 went bye-bye. So are you on board with the 5-7 format?
Absolutamente. I like it. I like it. The five highest-rated conference champions are going to come from the Big Dog Conference. We know that. And so, and that leaves ample room for the runner-ups in the conference title games, and that rare third team that just might have gotten edged out. So, it's going to be largely dominated by what we call Power Five schools, but there's going to be room for other schools that are making a run. The group, what do we call them now? Group of Five, Doug.
So the group of five is almost guaranteed that fifth spot.
They're going to get that fifth spot, but
Pac-12 doesn't exist.
It's going to be mostly the big dogs dominating. And personally, that's what I want anyway. I like a good underdog story, just as much as the next guy does. But college football is the most fun when the big dogs are barking, and the big dogs are going to be barking in the 12-team CFP. And let me tell you something. The teams that don't make that 12-team CFP, the coach is going to be under immense pressure because you don't have to be top four anymore. If you can't get the top 12 and you're making an exorbitant money, your feet are going to be held to that CFP fire.
Well, I figured up. I went back and looked at the 10-year history of the CFP, and the SEC would have gotten four teams in. Four of the last 6 years, they would have gotten four. And the other one of the other two, when they didn't, they would have gotten three. So I think they can probably count on a minimum of three and probably four. One thing I worry about is that, okay, they don't want that extra loss in there. So that's temptation to stay with the
week, week and week scheduling.
I hate it. It's bad for the game. It's bad for the players.
CDC insists they're going to continue. CDC's going to continue to play tough schedules.
And they will.
But a Michigan loss could hurt them. Could hurt their 12 team cause. And so those are the kind of things that you have to consider. I applaud the schedule makers over there for scheduling Michigan and Ohio State's coming in at the end of the decade, I believe. And so those kind of things excite me as a sports fan. But how are you going to feel, Doc? And I'm just being devil's advocate here. Don't say I don't like it, but I'm just bringing it up. How do you feel if you lose to Michigan and a team that you know you're better than played Abilene Christian and beat them 74-0? And who really gives a rat, you know what, about beating up on a team that's not even D1? But that's a win. and you've got two or three losses, two of them in conference and one at the big house, and this other team doesn't have that loss, and they've got one fewer loss than you, and they played a cupcake. Then you may have to readdress and reconsider how you're scheduling these people.
Well, I applaud it. The next 4 years, they have two with Michigan, two with Ohio State. And you and I both know Texas does not get in this past year without that win in Alabama.
That's absolutely.
That separated. And if they hadn't scheduled or beaten Alabama, Georgia gets that fourth spot, or Florida State gets that fourth spot. I'm sure it's probably be Florida State, and Georgia still would have been left out. So I think you need to. The trouble is, if they keep the eight conference games versus nine, it's just going to encourage the most of them to schedule. You know, they got to schedule one Power Five in that, but that could be anybody. You know,
but then you, but then you, but then you, but then you schedule Swanee State. I mean,
well, a lot of them. They'll McNeese State and Mercer and so
you
on.
Know not. And I've had this conversation with a couple of buddies in the radio business, and they go, "It's just, you know, over the years said it's just different in this conference." Yeah, you know what? Football is football, and you and quit pretending that the SEC is a minefield from top to bottom. Mm-hmm. I've seen Vanderbilt.
Sure,
not impressed.
South Carolina's been down.
I've seen South Carolina
been down.
Mississippi State, Stark Vegas, not rocking right now.
Arkansas was terrible last year.
So it's not a minefield from top to bottom. Florida is not Florida from the Steve Spurrier days.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. It's not Florida from the Urban Meyer days. No, it's in Tennessee. Those are big names that haven't – they ain't moved the needle in a while, Doug. They haven't moved that needle.
No.
So – you're telling me, I mean, if I'm Sarkisian, I'm going, okay, I know Alabama is Alabama. I know LSU is on the way up. They're back. Nussmeier's going to be good next year, Doug. I've been watching him. I know that Aggie has got that game circled in red ink. And I know Kirby Smart is Kirby Smart. But the rest of it, it's competition. It's competition. Texas ain't scared of anybody in that league because
mm-hmm.
they beat Alabama, they beat Georgia, and they were
better.
In a fourth of 17, well, fourth of 17 of possibly upsetting LSU, which was an NFL football team playing at
sure.
DKR. That so
perfect record.
So you can't tell me that the Longhorns are going to go in there sheepish. They're going in there mm-hmm. with arrogance, bravado, confidence. And a head coach who told us 3 weeks ago that he's obsessed, borderline obsessed mm-hmm. with winning. I love to hear that. I love to hear that.
Oh, yeah.
Coming from Steve Sarkisian. And he got his bag, so he's ready to roll.
He needs to be. One thing I'm not wild about is the buys that the first four teams get. It's such an advantage. It's a huge advantage over the other team. Now Texas, if this had been in place – this past year, Texas would have gotten a bye. And then
oh, yeah.
in the quarterfinals, they would have played the winner of Georgia and the Ole Miss. And that's all sexy, you know. But and the other good thing is that the four conference champions would probably be the ones they always get the bye. And Notre Dame can't get a bye. And so
they're not a conference champion.
Not a conference champion, so maybe that puts some pressure.
Wait, the way it's set up, Duck. Notre Dame could never be top five.
I don't think they can be top four, because they can't be a conference champion.
Man, so. that's a can of worms right there.
Oh, it is. It is.
Be thankful they're crappy.
Yeah, people could say, well, join a conference, and then you don't have that problem. So,
yeah,
and then the other thing, too.
You should join the ACC. Join the ACC.
Yeah.
Why not?
Oh, I know. Well, they'd probably
play that schedule.
Maybe the ACC or the Big Ten, probably. So, but I thought that would be interesting. The other thing they got to decide is how to distribute the revenue, which goes back to what we talked with Keith and giving the student athletes a share of the $8 billion over the next 6 years. So lots of dollars.
That's more Kirk Bowles money right there.
Hey, stop it.
That's generational Bowles right there. That's That's some Leon Bowles
Let's
money right there.
put a bow on this with the basketball. You were at the K-State
Oh,
game
hoops.
Monday.
Had to have it. They had to
Didn't
have it.
look that good
62,
all the
62-56. They didn't play well, Kirk. They just
time.
did not play well. What is it about that beautiful Moody Center where all you know the first year they were gold at the Moody, and now they can't make shots. And man, it was horrible. And I tweeted at one point, I go, these Rams are going to sue. They're going to be charged with assault. These shooters are just beating these rims, smithereens. Just awful.
You're both,
And
what, 36%, 34%?
36% from the field. That's not going to cut
Pretty
it.
weak.
That's not going to cut it in Lawrence. And it ain't going to cut it in Lubbock.
Yeah.
And I know it ain't cut it in Waco. So I don't know. I don't know, Doug. They got that win. They're 6-7. They go to Kansas Saturday. I think they got to win. They got to spring one of these upsets for fans to feel really good about them getting into this thing. They still got to play Oklahoma State, who they'll beat. Who else they got? They got five
Oklahoma.
Left.
They've only got two
Oklahoma.
home games left.
Two home, and that's the Oklahoma schools, right? Or is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Oklahoma schools, right? So
they got to win the
they
two
could,
home games.
I Duck, I'm telling you, they play better on the road. And they can go into Kansas and win. This is not the Kansas of old.
It's still pretty good.
They'll be ready. They'll be ready. But better Kansas teams than this one have lost to Texas. The Shaka went in there and won by 25 4 years ago. But what a better team than this one. I don't know that I love me some Dylan Dessou. How can you not?
He's
How
awesome.
Can you not? But when your second guy is 5'9", 5'10", they can take him away. The guards in this conference are so big, so physical. You saw what Houston did to them. And it worries me that when on those nights that Max Asmus isn't playing well, and he hasn't shot it well for a while now, Doug, since going back to that
especially
TCU
the first
game.
Half. He's had two bad first halves.
Yeah, he's had some bad halves. It worries me that Tyrese Hunter or one of those other guys is not going to be able to pick up the slack. IT Orton played pretty well. He had a couple threes that kept him up against K-State. So they've got some guys that are trying to step up. Brock Cunningham's played pretty well lately off the bench. But it just feels like a one-man game. And Dylan Mitchell goes away far too often. He's got to figure out how to get his – if he can get his mid-range game going, and I'm saying right now he has no business leaving after this season. He needs to come back for a junior year and figure out how to hit that turnaround 12 to 15-footer, that pull-up, his pull-up game. Just needs work. You can't live on dunks. You cannot live on dunks because at the next, I mean, these putbacks and dunks. Yeah,
it's around
that's
the
it.
Rim. If it's not around the rim, he's not scoring.
He's way more of an athlete than he is a technician, and he's got to work on his game. He's got to work on his game.
Said if you look at the mock draft in the NBA, there's not an NBA player on Texas roster. You know,
no,
nobody's listed. The Baylor's got a couple, you know, Houston, Kansas got a couple, you know, a lot of other players, you know, listed as NBA prospects. So I don't know. I think they'll get
guys,
in at 8
when you lose
and 10.
When you lose those recruits, Doug, when you lose those guys that could be one and dones, and you don't, and you can't replace them with marquee talent. And you know, Max, they brought in Max, and Max has been fine. But to lose Holland, and who was the other one, Doug? I can't even remember his name. But to lose those guys, to me, just that's hard to come back from.
Well, it's good that Adam Silver said they may dispense with the Ignite team, the G League Ignite team, because NIL has kind of accomplished that for them, for players that didn't want to go to college because they weren't getting any money. So, you know, and I think, I don't know if the G League Ignite team's been a failure or not. I know at one time they were like 6-31. You know, you got a mixture of grown men and 17 or 18 year olds and playing on the road and not living at home. And, you know, it's a tough environment. So it'd be nice if they if that went away, because that means more talent in college ranks, which I
Yeah.
would, I know Rodney Terry would appreciate that. Wish he was in place last year.
When you look at
So.
the very top, you look at the top of the rankings, Doug. Old basketball players win.
Always,
Those
always.
teams are old.
No
UConn is
players
old.
with guards.
Houston is old. Purdue
Yep.
is old. Those teams have juniors and seniors that are. And that Zach Edey, is he a senior, Doug? The Purdue, the big guy, is he a senior or a
He may be
junior?
a junior, I'm not sure, but he's
You know,
not
big
listed
guys,
as a
where do you go? Where do you go? They don't play center anymore in the league.
Not
Wemby
many.
is not he is not a center. He's bringing the ball down. He's shooting threes. He's passing. He's playmaking. He just happens to be 7'5" or 7'3". I'm telling you, Duck, there's nowhere like Edie might go somewhere. He may have to go to Europe to play ball. I don't know. But there aren't many guys like that. So what's happening is the big guys are staying longer. And old guys stay longer. Jamal Shedd is not listed as a lottery pick. And we know he's a baller. He's a great college player. And so
He
good for
got a
college
wooden crown.
basketball. Good for college basketball. And Kelvin Sampson came out and said, and I don't know what you guys are watching. He's the best point guard in college basketball.
He
And how
is.
he's not getting accolades. He is. He absolutely is. He delivers for his team every night.
Every
And so
night.
I don't understand why he's not. Why he's not getting those kind of accolades, but I'm glad that he's playing college ball because he's been a pleasure to watch, especially in this first season of the Big 12. I've seen more of Jamal in the last month than I did in 3 other years in college.
He should be the Big 12 player of the year, in my opinion. He's been that solid, that consistent, you know.
Who else would you give it to?
Well, I can't believe they left him off the wooden finalist list. L.J. Crier's teammate is the former Baylor guard, but Jamal Shedd makes that team tick.
LJ Crier would be the first to tell you that Jamal Shedd's better than
Oh,
him.
yeah. No question about it. So.
Without Jamal Shedd, LJ Crier is not nearly as good because he puts LJ Crier in positions to be successful. He is the maestro, he's the conductor of that orchestra. They are very good. I know we're going to be filling out brackets in about a month, Doug. They're a Final Four team. To me, I may have them winning it all.
No, I think I already do, depending on their matchup. And they got a chance to play in a regional in Dallas. So that can help them get to the Final Four too. So, but we're coming down the home stretch. It's going to be interesting, and we'll be here to talk about it.
Well, Duck, it's been a pleasure. 326 in the books all over UT baseball with Longhorn legend Keith Moreland. We hit on the Sark windfall. We hit on college football playoffs, going for the 5-7, and Longhorn basketball, big game at Kansas on Saturday. That's going to do it for this episode. We appreciate a special shout out to Miss Millie, who I met at Luby's. Duck, she is an avid listener of On Second Thought. She and her husband, and they've been
Awesome.
Longhorn fans. Their Texas X has been around forever, and they don't miss an episode. We need people like Miss Millie. We appreciate you.
I
That'll
love
do it
you.
for this episode. We will see you next time. Thanks for joining us. For the Duck, I'm Seth Golden.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Seth and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.